Let's go ahead and get started on another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired word. We're going to pick up in Ezekiel chapter 5 in just one moment. First, I want to remind you, we are following now three of the big name prophets from this time period. There is Jeremiah, who was the final big prophet to the southern kingdom of Judah. He's been telling them for a long time now that the Babylonians are coming. God's judgment is coming through this Babylonians. The city of Jerusalem is going to be destroyed. The temple is going to be destroyed. And everybody needs to submit to this discipline that's coming from the hand of the Lord. And unfortunately, some people have tried to kill him over that. Most recently, he was told to walk around with a yoke on his neck and shoulders to say that everybody needed to take on the yoke of Nebuchadnezzar voluntarily, because if they didn't, they would face even stronger judgment. And a false prophet named Hananiah basically took it off of him and said, that's not the way it's going to be. Everything's going to be fine. Babylon is not going to be a problem in very much longer. In fact, everybody that has been taken away to Babylon is coming back soon, and the temple tableware of God is going to be brought back as well. And Jeremiah's response by the prompting of the Holy Spirit is, yeah, that'd be nice if that happened, but it's not. And you're going to be dying soon. And he does. He dies very soon after the prophecy of Jeremiah. The other big name prophet is Daniel, who has been taken away as a teenager to Babylon to become one of the members of Nebuchadnezzar's cabinet. He was going to be a junior member to start with, but things have changed. And he is now, although very young, the head of the counselors advising Nebuchadnezzar. And I actually think that was God's way of making sure that the Israelis, the Judeans that go into captivity, go into exile, will be protected in that place so that they could become the seed stock of God. Now, we will be coming back to his work later. The other prophet is Ezekiel, the man that we've been looking at quite a bit recently. He also is in exile. He is a priest that is not being able to serve in the temple at Jerusalem because he is in Babylon. He's at a city called Tel Aviv, which is southeast of the capital city of Babylon. And he has been seeing visions of God. And then, the most significant thing we've recently seen is that God told him to pantomime, because he wasn't allowed to talk, the judgment of God related to the history of Israel. So he was to lay on his left side for 390 days to represent the 390 years that passed from the founding of God's temple at Jerusalem until its coming destruction. And the timing is perfect on that. The temple was founded in 977 BC, and its destruction will happen in 587. Then he was to swap over to his right side and lay there for 40 days. And that seems to represent the 40 years of Jeremiah's ministry, the 40 final years of Judah. And he's to do all of this completely silent, bound up in some fashion, with a diorama of the siege of Jerusalem right there in front of him, although he's got a metal barricade between him and it to show that God won't listen to prayers for mercy during the time of the siege. And he also is eating a limited ration of food each day cooked over cow dung. Originally, God said, you're going to do it over people poop, but he asked that he be excused from that, and God granted it. And so this is going to be just enough water to keep him hydrated, during his 430 days, and not enough food to keep his body completely strong. So he will lose weight over the year plus that he does this. So he began all of that in 594 BC, and he finished all of it in the fifth month, the 28th day of 593 BC. This is all Jewish calendar stuff. Calendar for our idea would be basically he finishes in August of 593 BC. And then he can start talking again. And God has been telling him what he should say once he finished, and also what he should do in relationship to the timing of the siege and destruction of Jerusalem. Now keep in mind, he is not going to be anywhere near Jerusalem physically. He's up in Mesopotamia. He's not very far from the capital city of Babylon. And he is going to be telling the people up there things as they happen so that they will know when they get confirmation from the refugees later that God is using Ezekiel as a prophet. All right, so with all that background material, let's now go to Ezekiel chapter 5, verse number 1. You, O son of man, and that's God's pet name for him right now. We usually think of son of man as a title for Jesus as the Messiah, but here it stands in the place of the word we would say human being. So you, O son of man, take a sharp sword. Use it as a barber's razor and pass it over your head and your beard. Now, it was common practice that after those who had taken the Nazirite vow finished their vow time, that they would shave their head and beard, and then they would burn up the hair in a ceremony at the temple. So there seems to be some connection here to that sort of ceremony, except he's not going to do it at the temple. So here, cut your hair and your head and your beard, then take balances for weighing and divide the hair, which again tells me that probably he went the full 430 days without cutting his hair or beard. So divide the hair, verse 2. A third part you shall burn in the fire in the midst of the city when the days of the siege are completed. So he will possibly not even cut his hair until 587. And this is 593. So it would be even longer and bushier, woolier, by the time he gets to that time period. But he is to burn it at least after the siege is completed at Jerusalem in 587. God will actually tell him the exact day it finishes as part of testimony to the event. Now, so you're going to burn it in the fire in the midst of Tel Aviv, I think, although it's possible he would just simply go from the Jewish community at Tel Aviv up to Babylon. A third part of it you shall take and strike with the sword around the city. So burn a third of it and then take your sword out that you cut your hair with, your beard with, and start whacking at a third part. Chop it up into even smaller pieces around the city. And then a third part you shall scatter to the wind, and I will unsheathe a sword after them. So one-third dies in the fires of judgment at Jerusalem. And another third gets killed with the sword there at Jerusalem. So probably we're talking about dying from pestilence and then also dying from the actual warfare. And then a third of it's going to be scattered to the wind chased away from Jerusalem by the judgment of God. That seems to be the idea of chasing it with the sword and scattering it in the wind. And then, verse 3, you shall take from these a small number and bind them in the skirts of your robe. So he takes a third, or he takes a little small portion of that last third, and he somehow weaves it in or ties it in or sews it in to the special covenant fringe that is on his robe. Remember, this covenant fringe, purple prominence of some sort, was supposed to remind the Jewish people every day that they belong to God's covenant and were supposed to act like it. So tying these little pieces of hair into that little covenant portion is to say that some of the people are going to be saved to start over again with in the covenant. This will be those that will either themselves be returning or their family members will be returning to restart Judah later. Then verse number 4 says, and of these again you shall take some and cast them into the midst of the fire and burn them in the fire. From there a fire will come out into all the house of Israel. So even of that group that gets away, some are still going to be under God's judgment. And we will see that. There will be a ton of people die of starvation and disease and actual active warfare during the siege and destruction of Jerusalem. Those that are taken away into exile, only some of them will actually be able to come back themselves or send descendants back. Others will be coming under God's judgment where they're at. Verse number 5. Thus says he who is God, or he who is the Lord. This is Jerusalem. I have set her in the city, or the center of the nations, with countries all around her. Sometimes the Jewish people talked about Jerusalem being the navel of the world, the belly button of the world. And if you think about Jerusalem being on the land bridge between Asia and Africa, and actually, because Asia and Europe are connected just north of Israel, it's on the land bridge between Europe and Asia and Africa as well. So it is at the center of the ancient world, and that's why there's so much activity that takes place in connection to Israel. And so it's also the place where God placed his name. The Israelis were supposed to be witnessing on his behalf to the rest of the world. But there's a problem right now. They've not kept the covenant. So verse 6, God says, and she has rebelled against my rules by doing wickedness more than the nations, and against my statutes more than the countries all around her. For they have rejected my rules and have not walked in my statutes. So God is making it plain that Israel, Judah is what's left of Israel, has sinned in such a way that they've exceeded the sins of the Canaanites and the Amorites before them, and they are worse in many respects than all the pagan nations around them. And that is why God is bringing judgment. Verse 7, therefore, thus says he who is God, because you are more turbulent than the nations that are all around you, and have not walked in my statutes or obeyed my rules, and have not even acted according to the rules of the nations that are all around you. See, they're even violating the customary practices of what's right and wrong and fair of Gentiles. Verse 8, therefore, thus says he who is God. And what we're seeing here in this name with the special print is you've got the title Lord, Adonai, followed by the actual divine name of God, He Who Is. And so our English Standard Version, like other English versions, have tried to get both the word Lord and God in there to make it clear this is a divine name title that keeps popping up. So behold, I, even I, am against you, and I will execute judgments in your midst in the sight of the nations, and because of all your abominations. An abomination is something that makes someone looking at it sick or hearing about it sick. And so God is saying your actions have been nauseating, sickening. And because of all your abominations, I will do with you what I have never yet done, and the like of which I will never do again. Therefore, fathers shall eat their sons in your midst, and sons shall eat their fathers. Cannibalism is the bottom tier of societal breakdown. And it happened a little bit in Samaria whenever the northern kingdom fell. But apparently it's going to happen on a very large scale with the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple and Judea. I will execute judgments on you, and any of you who survive, I will scatter to all the winds. That will be what Ezekiel will demonstrate later dividing his cut hair up into different bits and pieces. Therefore, as I live, declares He who is God, or He who is the Lord, surely because you have defiled my sanctuary with all your detestable things and with all your abominations, therefore I will withdraw. Now that is going to come up later in the story of Ezekiel. He will actually see the presence of God leave the Ark of the Covenant, leave the Holy of Holies, leave the temple courtyard, leave Jerusalem, and disappear over the crest of the Mount of Olives. He will see that in his vision. So God is basically saying, I've had enough, I'm out of here. And then judgment will fall on the empty house. My eye will not spare, and I will have no pity. A third part of you shall die of pestilence and be consumed with famine in your midst. That's the burning of a third of the hair. And a third part of you shall fall by the sword all around you. That's going to happen with everybody being killed in the siege and overtaking of the city. And then a third part of you I will scatter to all the winds and will unsheathe the sword after them. Thus shall my anger spend itself, and I will vent my fury upon them and satisfy myself, and they shall know that I am He who is, that I have spoken in my jealousy when I spent my fury upon them. Moreover, I will make you a desolation and an object of reproach among the nations all around you and in the sight of all who pass by. You shall be a reproach and a taunt, a warning and a horror to the nations all around you when I execute judgments on you in anger and fury and with furious rebukes. I am He who is. I have spoken. When I send against you the deadly arrows of famine, arrows for destruction, which I will send to destroy you, and when I bring more and more famine upon you and break your supply of bread, I will send famine and wild beasts upon you, and they will rob you of your children. This is just very straight talk of what's going to happen when God withdraws His complete protection of the country of Israel, the country of Judah, the city of Jerusalem, the Temple Mount itself. There is going to be a lot of death and destruction and suffering. And that may seem hard to hear, but it's true. God is going to do this because of their sin. He has already warned them at the very beginning of the covenant. book of Deuteronomy, where Moses gives his final address. God said, you can have blessings if you live by the covenant, but you will end up with curses if you don't live by the covenant. This is my land, you're supposed to be my people, and if you will not be my people and live by my covenant, you cannot stay in the land. And so the last part of the curse in the book of Deuteronomy is that they would suffer horribly and then see the destruction of the sanctuaries of their cities, and then they themselves would be exiled from the land for a period of time. Verse number 17 continues, pestilence and blood shall pass through you, and I will bring the sword upon you. I am he who is, I have spoken. So very, very strong words coming through the prophet Ezekiel to those that are already in exile about what's going to happen down in the Holy Land. And of course, these things are going to be written down and sent to Judea and be read there. Verse 1 of chapter 6, the word of he who is came to me. Son of man, set your face against the mountains of Israel and prophesy against them. Now, mountains, of course, is the terrain of Israel, of Judah, but it is also symbolic of the nation itself. Mountains sometimes stand in the place of nations. Verse 3, and say, you mountains of Israel, hear the word of he who is the Lord, he who is God. Thus says he who is God to the mountains and the hills, to the ravines and the valleys. Behold, I, even I, will bring a sword upon you, and I will destroy your high places. Now, scattered over the terrain of northern Israel before they were destroyed, and now over southern Judah, are all these pagan worship sites, all these god and goddess idol sites. And so God says, all that's got to go. Verse 4, your altar shall become desolate, and your incense altar shall be broken, and I will cast down your slain before your altar or your idols, and I will lay the dead bodies of the people of Israel before their idols. So this is all what's going to happen when the invasion takes place. And I will scatter your bones around your altars. Wherever you dwell, the cities shall be waste and the high places ruined, so that your idols will be waste and ruined, your idols broken and destroyed, your incense altars cut down, your works wiped out, and the slain shall fall in your midst, and you shall know that I am he who is. So idolatry is one of the main sins that has overtaken the kingdom of Judah during its final stages. And in these post-Josiah days, it is all about idolatry. Idols have been added to the temple itself very prominently. Verse number 8. Yet I will leave some of you alive when you have among the nations some who escape the sword, and when you have scattered through the countries, then those of you who escape will remember me among the nations where they're carried captive, how I have been broken over their whoring heart that has departed from me, and over their eyes that go whoring after their idols. And they will be loathsome in their own sight for the evils that they have committed, for all their abominations. And they shall know that I am he who is. I have not said in vain that I will do this evil to them. So God lets them know ahead of time, just like in the book of Deuteronomy. Once you get into exile, the survivors, at least some remnant of them, will repent genuinely of all the stuff, all the sin that had brought about the judgment. And they will leave behind their sinful practices. And they will turn back to God and make promises to keep the covenant. And that is when God will bring some back to the promised land and start fresh. Verse 11. Thus says he who is the Lord, he who is God, clap your hands, stamp your feet, and say, "Alas, because of all the evil abominations of the house of Israel, for they shall fall by the sword, by famine, and by pestilence." Now, this is not clapping your hands in applause or stamping your feet, you know, in excitement, like in some sort of sporting venue. This is clapping your hands and stomping your feet out of sorrow and frustration and grief. And they will be sad over all the judgment that's happened. Verse 12, "He who is far off shall die of pestilence, and he who is near shall fall by the sword. He who is left and is preserved shall die by famine. Thus I will spend my fury on them, and you shall know that I am he, when their slain lie among their idols, around their altars, on every hill, on all the mountaintops, under every green tree, under every leafy oak, wherever they offered pleasing aroma to their idols." Because when the Babylonians invade, a lot of these people will resort to worshiping their idols. They will go to their little sacred high places and they'll beg and they'll plead with their gods and goddesses represented by these idols to save them. And they will die in huge numbers in all those false worship sites. Verse 14, "And I will stretch out my hand against them and make the land desolate and waste in all their dwelling places, from the wilderness to Riblah." Now, Riblah is going to become important because Riblah up in the north of Israel, will be the staging area outside of the Promised Land from which a lot of these people will be taken off into exile. And then they will know that I am he who is. So God says, I don't really want to have to do it this way, but judgment's going to come just like I said it would, and then at least some of you will then understand and appreciate, I'm the real God.